Is there a for the general, the layman who's not a biochemist? I mean, is there a key argument, or maybe just a question that we can raise if we get into some discussions like this?
Well, here's one. A problem for Darwin's theory is that it would have a tough time putting things together that need many parts to work. And an example I use from everyday life is a mouse trap. If you think of a mechanical mouse trap, it's got a spring and it's got a holding bar and it's got its wooden base and a couple other metal parts. And it turns out it needs all of those things to work. If one of them were removed, then the trap would be broken. It wouldn't be able to catch any mice. And I have a term for that. I call it irreducibly complex. And those things turn out to be problems for a Darwinian-like process, because a Darwinian process has to change something, and it has to be an improvement so that it can spread in a population and then change again and be another improvement. But trying to gradually make an irreducibly complex system like a mousetrap is very, very difficult, because the trapping ability only appears when the system's put together. Well, it turns out, you know, mousetraps are interesting, but it turns out that science has discovered that at the very foundation of life in the cell, there are machines, quite literally machines made out of molecules, which are in fact irreducibly complex, much more so than a mousetrap, and so they fit very poorly with Darwin's theory. So, just if somebody asks you what's the problem here, say mousetrap. Say it's a big problem for Darwin's theory. Not only that, but we can immediately realize that a mousetrap was designed because we recognize design in the purposeful arrangement of parts. And when you see a number of parts arranged just so, and they have to be precisely positioned and so on in order to work, that's how we determine that something was designed. So irreducibly complex systems are both problems for Darwinism and strong pointers towards design. Mm.
I was reading an article, a critique of your book, and one of the issues that talked about was pseudogenes. There's duplicate material there, so that's not necessarily complexity; it's just background.
Well, yeah, a lot of people confuse things, and they say that, well, okay, you say life was intelligently designed. Then why did I, you know, cut myself when I was shaving this morning? And they seem to think that intelligent design means that nothing in life can go wrong, that there can't be accidents, there can't be mistakes. But there's no such requirement for intelligent design. Just like you would know that a car, even if it kind of crashed and, you know, one wheel was bent or something, you would still realize that that was intelligently designed. In the same way, in the DNA of a cell, if the DNA codes for proteins and they all work together to perform very sophisticated functions, to make molecular machines, to encode information, and so on. But over on the left, there was a kind of a broken piece of something. You would not conclude that, therefore, all of that working machinery arose by chance. Let me give you just one more. Analogy. Suppose somebody had a piece of block, and they whittled a figure from the block, like, I don't know, the Venus rising from the sea, or a wooden copy of Mount Rushmore or something. And when they were done, they had this thing, and there were a bunch of wood chips on the floor. Wouldn't it be kind of silly for somebody to come along and point at the wood chips and say, hey, you know, that means, look at all those chips. They have no function. That means that figure of, say, the president's or whatever must have come about by accident. So pseudogenes are genes which kind of look like functioning genes, but they have features in them that make some people think that they can't work, at least in the usual way. And so they say that they are accidents. And my response is, well, yeah, maybe they are. You know, nobody said that genetic accidents can't happen, even in a design system. But the fact that they might be mistakes, and I should say that they might not be mistakes too, because it turns out that people are finding out that pseudogenes can actually do other things in the cell, things other than what the normal genes do. But even if they were mistakes, that does not prove that the functioning parts of the cell, it has no bearing on the fact that the functioning parts of the cell are best explained by design.
It does seem that, I mean, the continuing weight of evidence, you've got 30 years researching in biochemistry, that, I mean, the more that we find out, is there sort of a tipping point, maybe in terms of the weight of evidence that says, you know, we just can't simply put our head in the sand and ignore this anymore?
Yeah, I think there will be, but it's tricky predicting when that will be. I like to liken it to the fall of communism, not because the Darwinists are bad guys like communists or anything like that, but it's just that everybody knew for a long time that communism wasn't working, even economically as it was promised, and it was a dying system, but there were vested interests that wanted to keep it running, and it was a series of accidents that kind of historical accidents where it kind of toppled over in the late 1980s. It might be that way with Darwinism too. It's, you know, I think it's plain that it's already a poor theory, and actually a lot of scientists think that Darwinism is a poor theory, but they're shy about the idea of intelligent design. But predicting when that tipping point will come is something that's beyond me.
Dr. Michael Behe is my guest today. We're talking about intelligent design, and also he's written a book called Darwin's Black Box, The Biochemical Challenge to Evolution. Michael, it just seems like as you've talked and you've gone through some of the discussions that logic is really an important part in, I guess, your arguments are built on logic, and we sort of resonate with them. But, you know, would a scientist say, well, we throw logic out the window because it all has to be tested? I mean, what role does logic play in sort of the arguments for or against?
Oh, it plays a big role. It's logic is part of science. I mean, in science, you do experiments, you get results, or you go out in the field and you look and find things. But then you've got to kind of come up with a theory or deduce what do you think's going on. And so reasoning and logic is all part of science. And so everybody pretty much agrees what data we have. We know there are proteins, we know there's a genetic code, we know that there's fantastically complex machinery that translates the information in DNA into something called messenger RNA, which is then transcribed into proteins. And notice all these words that are evocative of intelligence, and a code and transcribe and translate. What we're doing is trying to reason what this the best explanation for this is, and unfortunately, we're not all Mr. Spock in science. We're not emotionless logic machines. So some people want a particular explanation or other to be true, and historically, of course, Darwinism has kind of dominated explanations in science even before we knew what the cell was or what DNA was doing and so on. And there's kind of there's a resistance to changes in explanation. So not only do you have to use logic, but you have to persuade people who might not want to change their minds or not want to have a different explanation for what new data has been discovered. So both sides try to use logic and persuasion and examples and the scientific data, but people are not just logic machines, so we need that plus more.